and sports. WQKR Portland, 1270 AM and 101.7 FM.
While the hosts and guests on this program are encouraged to express their views, they do not necessarily reflect those of the ownership or management of WQKR.
Sumner County, welcome to the Loyal Opposition, a show based on the American ideal that nations like ours benefit when government reflects a diversity of voices and makes space for dissent. That's why we're here, to air the voice of dissent to the supermajority's policies and ideas. I am your host, Len Asante. It is 5:01 p.m. on a beautiful, sunny Wednesday afternoon here in downtown Portland, Tennessee. 75 degrees outside right now, going down to 49 degrees tonight. Tomorrow, more of the same. Sunny, high of 78, low of 45. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, pretty much all the same. So some beautiful weather out there. So get out there and enjoy it. And, of course, have a safe ride home tonight from wherever you're coming from to wherever you're going to. All right, we got a special guest on the show today. We have got His Honor, and back where I grew up, we spelled that H-I-Z-Z-O-N-E-R, His Honor. We've got the Honorable Mike Callis, Mayor of Portland, Tennessee, with us today, and we're going to be talking what's going on in Portland. Mayor Callis, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be with you. I'm kind of sitting here watching Morty try to untangle all these cables here he's got in front of him right now. He's trying to figure out. So we're either not live on the air or they're hearing us in Thailand. I'm not sure which one's going on right now.
Yeah,
so.
Roger sometimes is kind of at the limit of his, abilities. He's got a lot of stuff going on here, a lot of buttons to push and whatnot. So I think we're going out on the air. I think we're pretty sure we're out there. we're being heard from Westmoreland down to almost Hendersonville.
Yeah, everywhere in between. Yeah, I tried to pick it up. I have to head down the ridge several times for different things, and so you can listen to WQKR for a pretty good distance until it finally starts fading into something else. But yeah.
So they let you out of the city every now and then, huh?
They do. Unfortunately, one of the things, serving as mayor in the city of Portland, that if you want to making sure that you're keeping up with all of the other things that affect you as a city, that you need to go meet in all the other places. So I meet with other cities and meet with other organizations along the way. I'm a part of some different organizations. Metropolitan Planning Organization.
Sure. I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, hey, it covers, multiple counties. I'm currently serve as the chairman of the Transportation Policy Board. And so we meet and go over a lot of big issues down there. There's billions of dollars that end up flowing through some of those organizations, that how it's structured by law, and that TDOT's handling these major projects, but as a group, we vote on all of that and go through the transportation improvement plans. We call it the TIP.
The TIP.
Yeah. Okay. And so we're involved in all that, and we have a really good representation on that board from Sumner County. We're probably the most faithful group to meet there, and so I'm very thankful of that.
I'm glad you guys are keeping your nose to the grindstone there.
Yeah, Mayor Jamie Cleary, Paige Brown, are very active in that as well. Mayor Billy Vogel from Robertson County is active in it, and so we talk a lot. Gerald Herman's the city manager in White House. He's there, so at every meeting, and it's just good for us to come together, and we're aware of all the projects, and it's pretty good.
We just had, just the other day, the sort of grand opening ribbon cutting ceremony for an improved stretch of I-65.
That's right.
Nearby here. Is that something that came before you guys at some point?
Yeah, and so, this was been on the books and talked about, of course, for many years.
It does take a little while to get from idea to actually
It does. And actually, the interesting part of this, so this is technically, it's referred to oftentimes as a 10-mile stretch. It's not quite 10 miles. It's close, but it's from the state line to just past exit 112 there on I-65. The goal is to go from Rivergate to the state line, and I add an extra lane on each side, north and south. The Portland section from the state line to exit 112 was technically supposed to be the last phase in this widening. But that particular stretch of interstate has been really difficult for TDOT to maintain. So when it was built many years ago, I think the soils there did not hold up as well as anticipated for the kind of freight that now travels along I-65 in that structure. So they made a decision that if they were to wait to the end to do that section, they would have repaved that and worked on it at least two more times. And they calculated out the money and said, listen, let's go in there and do that section first. So if you had a chance to drive through that area when it's under construction, they undercut all of those lanes about 3 foot deep and added in rock to fortify the ground so they could do the base coat, what we call a binder coat, and then they come back into the top coat, did the multiple bridges and all that. It goes along the way. So while it's good to see that open, people still need to be mindful of that. From the state line, if you're traveling from that direction to Rivergate, that's still about 10 years worth of construction because they're going to do it in phases. So this first 10-mile stretch was anticipated to take, you know, almost 3 years. They came in 7 months ahead of schedule.
We came in early on that.
Yeah, so, and they did a contract A and a contract B. So released that. That was the largest contract bid release in TDOT's history. And I find that amazing because there's been a lot of massive projects.
Yeah.
So that come in at $160 million. But there was actually a contract B that, based on how quick they could come in faster, they received a really, really big bonus.
Oh, they got a bonus, sure.
Yeah, which is good. So it motivated them to get out there and make sure they did it well. Jones Brothers did a great job on that. The city actually benefited from them being on site. So there at the old way station on 31W, they built their own asphalt plant so the asphalt could be transported. So, you know, asphalt needs to arrive on site at a certain temperature.
Right.
So they can spread it and compact it and do all that. So we sold them a lot of natural gas and a lot of water right there. So we were very fortunate in that and kind of hate to see them take it down. But
I was going to say they take it down when they're done, right?
Yeah, and they'll move it down to a different location. Yeah. So, yeah, and right now, if you go out there right now, so where we did the ribbon cutting to open up that 10-mile stretch, say on the northbound side is where we did the ribbon cutting. That was part of the way station. That's been completely converted to a semi-truck rest area. So they've come in, they flattened everything out, they poured a lot of concrete, has a lot of parking spaces. I come through there the other night, and all those spaces were completely filled. So the trucks are pulling in and parking as designed. They're going to be working across on the north southbound lane and going to restructure there. And just as a kind of a fun factoid, so rest areas are controlled by TDOT. Welcome centers are controlled by the Department of Tourism. So the welcome center there at exit 121 is under the Department of Tourism. Yeah, okay. So that's pretty interesting.
Hmm. All right. And the plan is for that to remain open.
The Welcome Center, yes, sir. So, you know, it's a beautiful facility. And I know this may sound odd. I encourage people, you need to go tour the Welcome Center at Exit 121 in Portland. It's one of the nicest anywhere in the state. They keep it well maintained and clean. And it's one of only, and if this is wrong, somebody correct me, I think it's only one of three built that way in the state. I think there's another one around the Chattanooga area there off the interstate. But it has that old shaker style design,
right.
But inside of it, so when Commissioner Ezell, which is part of the Purity family that Governor Lee tapped to be head of tourism, one of the things he wanted to do was update the Welcome Center. So he's come in and he's made put the TVs in there and all the advertisements so you can see. But one thing that's unique at the Welcome Center at exit 121, it has a history room in it. And you can go in there. So I'm saying, go tour that. Go up there and look. It's a beautiful little facility. We brought in Commissioner Ezell up a couple of years ago and wanted him to go tour a couple of things so they could see. I've offered, I said, I would love to partner and maybe put a very large 7-8 foot strawberry out by the welcome center, since you're kind of coming into the Portland area. And so we did discuss that a little bit. And one of the other projects along with that is fixing to start construction very soon. Is if you're out at exit 121, you notice there's no lighting, and it's very dark. It's right. Unsafe. So we have worked to secure. I've signed the contract. It's gone out to bid. It's been awarded. Construction will start pretty soon. They're getting ready to acquire all the materials. That lighting project is scheduled to be completed in April of 2025, and so the exit and on-ramps and that area around the Welcome Center and the exit around the bridge itself, and if you're listening on the radio, you can't see me move my hands, and so I'm always talking with my hands. I'm trying to describe it. So we're going to have lighting there. If you look across I-65 at the new Welcome Center that Kentucky built, they bulldozed the other one, built a nice facility, but put all that high-mast lighting up. And when we got to looking at the project, Exit 121 opened up the Wednesday before Thanksgiving 2019. Okay. And so I'm out there watching the project unfold, and I said, well, when does the lighting go in? And he said, well, there's no lighting on the project. And I said, well, so wait a minute. We've just built a brand new exit. You know, I had just come into office. I was sworn in December 1st, 2018. And I said, so the state's built a brand new exit into the state, and there's no lighting.
There's no lighting.
And so I began to meet then with the commissioner, T-Dot, and some others. And I said, have you ever seen a picture of North and South Korea from space? South Korea is lit up. North Korea is completely dark. And I said, that's what we've got going on up here. And I said, we don't want Kentucky to be lit up. And then right across the interstate, there's nothing there in Tennessee. So we were able to work with the state. TDOT provided 50% of the funding. I got a 10% match from Robertson County and then got a Unified Surface Transportation Block Grant for the other $732,000. We've got the contract signed. We're moving forward, looking forward to lighting going out there. It's a safety issue,
right?
But it's also going to be very beneficial. We're going to see development at Exit 121. We're going to see some retail commercial. Matter of fact, Planning Commission has just reviewed the first submission for a Travel Centers of America that it's going to be going off Vaughan Parkway right behind the Welcome Center. So we're going to see half of it dedicated to semis, half of it dedicated to vehicles. There will be multiple restaurants in the facility. It's a great location because that particular industrial park, during peak operation, be around 5,000 people working out there. And we're
really?
Still, yes, and we still got, and it's one of the things
they
that.
They need to eat, don't they?
Yeah, they need to eat, and right now there's only 3 quick service markets there, and they're getting a lot of use, and we're thankful for them being there, but they need more. And so the semis are already going into that facility because of the distribution centers and the other manufacturing. The employees are already coming into that area. We're hoping they're supposed to be meeting with the state as well. I would love to see them do a private-public partnership, maybe to allow some access from the Welcome Center to the backside of that development. It'd be handy for everybody,
sure.
Right?
So, and I would think that kind of leads to my follow-up question here about that. You know, having that Welcome Center there, I would imagine that is a benefit for the city because some of these people are going to decide to not just pull over and use the restroom and grab a brochure, but they might come into Portland.
That's right. And so, you know, we always utilize it around, of course, leading up to strawberry festivals to put out information to make people aware and that kind of stuff. But it's just a nice facility. And when I tell folks, you need to go check out, they're like, wait a minute, I only go to a Welcome Center when I'm going down the interstate and traveling.
Right.
You're telling me that if I live here in Portland, I should go out there. I said, absolutely, you should, because it is interesting, and the look of it and the beauty. Now, the downside with that Welcome Center, and this is the conversations we've had with the state, the downside with that Welcome Center is that semis park in front of it. And when you're traveling, if you've been out traveling, you know, you're trying to think, where do I pull off? Where can I go? What can I do? And if you're going, it's later at night and it's dark and you're coming down the interstate and all you see is rows of semis, you may think that's maybe not for pedestrian vehicle or traffic.
Truck rest.
It may look that way.
A welcome center.
So when Kentucky built theirs, they did a very smart thing. They changed the parking lot, got cars in the front, buses and semis off the backside and the side. They're at the Welcome Center, and when they're out of room, they need more room there anyway for parking. The good news is there's a little piece of land to the right that's actually, when you pull up the data, that's state-owned property. They have the ability to expand. So we had that conversation with them. If we could move the semis off to the side, because if you're traveling at night from Kentucky into Tennessee, that off-ramp going to the exit, they're lined up nose to tail all the way down the shoulder because there's no room to get in there. So if we could create a private-public partnership that when you get off at that exit, that you could actually go from the Welcome Center around back of the Travel Centers of America, who's going to have a lot of parking space set up for semis, it's a win-win for the state and them.
And that's going to attract semis like... honey attracts bees, right?
And so when truckers are out there, and different companies do it different ways, and sometimes they have cooperatives with like a Love's Truck Stop or a Travel Center, they map those out. And one of these things, when they tried to build these, they tried to build them based on fuel mileage of semis. And they know that I want you to come to my truck stop here, and then I want you to go to my truck stop 300 miles down the road.
Because I know you're going to need fuel.
Right, and so they do awards and the points, just like you would do with your car, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we think this could be very beneficial not only to that industrial park, to the citizens of Portland who may want to go out and get something from the restaurant out there. There'll be a couple of different kinds, and so I think they have three or four on the books that they're planning on installing out there. So we look forward to it. And then the folks in the rural area, maybe of Robertson County, at the top of Sumner, even into Kentucky, they could just drive over there, well, spend their money, right? That's your hope.
Right.
That's what you look for around the interstate, traffic to kind of come in and go back out and maybe not impact downtown areas as much, right? So, yeah, it could be handy for us.
Oh, all right. Bright things on the horizon. All right, folks, we just spent 15 minutes talking about asphalt. When we come back after these couple of messages, we're going to talk more about strawberries. All right, you're listening to The Loyal Opposition here on WQKR.
At the law office of Amanda J. Gentry, we are committed to defending your rights. We have a team committed to helping you navigate the court system, whether you've been accused of a crime or you're going through a messy divorce and custody. Call our team to help you navigate this system. We are here to protect your rights, to demand your rights, to enforce your rights. 615-604-6263. 615-604-6263. AmandaJGentry.com.
The Sumner County Anti-Drug Coalition, an organization dedicated to ending drug abuse, is now the Sumner Prevention Coalition. But their goal is the same, helping Sumner County residents with drug abuse problems turn their lives around and get on the road to recovery. Their mission is to unite people with vision, commitment, and resources to provide solutions to eliminate substance abuse and make a difference for youth, families, and individuals in Sumner County. The coalition and its staff of experienced professionals in the field envision a healthy, safe, and thriving community, free from substance abuse of all kinds, tobacco use, prescription drug abuse, and underage drinking. Find out how the Sumner Prevention Coalition can help you, and you can help the coalition. Visit them online at sumnercoalition.org. That's sumnercoalition.org.
WQKR. Portland is pleased to welcome Cole Lumber Company to our business community. They will now be this area's leading supplier of building materials. Operating since 1946, Cole Lumber, with their 7 Kentucky locations, has selected Portland as their first operation in Tennessee. And we are glad to have them here. Cole is 100% employee-owned. It is their goal to provide all of their customers with both quality building materials and friendly service. From a staff that is both knowledgeable and experienced, serving the needs of both contractors and homeowners, from building a dream home to a weekend project, Cole Lumber has the knowledge, experience, and materials to help you. No matter what you want or need, visit Cole Lumber Company, 462 North Broadway in Portland.
We have a saying here in the Tennessee Valley, if you don't like the weather, just give it a few minutes and it'll change, which is why you need a heating and cooling system that can keep up, like a high-efficiency electric heat pump that starts saving you money the minute you turn it on. And now that your local power company and TVA are offering 8% financing for up to 10 years, there's never been a smarter time to make the switch. So call your local power company or log on to EnergyRight.com.
Call CEMC and join the heat pump revolution today.
Back, everyone. This is the Loyal Opposition. I'm your host, Len Asante. You're listening to WQKR in Portland, Tennessee. It is 5:21 p.m., 74 sunny degrees in Portland. And we're sitting here having a conversation with Portland Mayor Mike Callis. And if you know the mayor, you know most of the conversing's coming from his side. But hey, in radio, that's the, when the host talks the least and the guest talks the most, that's good radio. So we're real happy to hear that. When we left, we said we were going to stop talking about asphalt, although clearly the recent projects in and around the Portland area, widening 65, the new exit here, even the Kentucky side widening there.
Yes.
Up three lanes up to Bowling.
Absolutely.
This is probably going to have a continuing positive impact on.
Well, and then our new bypass is fixing to go on the west side of town, so they're going to, their schedule is to break ground on the bypass August of 25. They're finishing up all the right-of-way purchases. They have a few more parcels just left to do. TDOT's working that whole process, and so we meet with them regular on that. They'll begin the north leg of the bypass, like I say, in fall of 2025. The goal is to start the southern leg, not necessarily when the northern's completely finished, but in a place where it makes sense to now rotate equipment to the southern leg and start. So the goal would be, so each leg is anticipated roughly 3 years of construction, but the hope is that the whole thing would come less than that and maybe shave a year or two off, because they'll already be mobilized for a lot of the stuff on the northern leg.
They'll be on site, so to speak.
They'll be on site.
Sure.
They're looking forward. TDOT's looking forward to this project. They don't often get to build a project like that in an area that is as open as this is. That don't happen very often for TDOT. So they're excited. This is about a $210 million project to build.
It's all open land pretty much, right?
Pretty much. You know, there's a couple of structures, but for the most part, our community's been talking about it for, 30
long
years.
Time.
And so some of the property owners have got to the point where it's never going to happen. And they've wondered, what can I do with my land? What do I do? When do I do it? And I get it. It's frustrating. But when the 10-year fiscally constrained transportation plan come out by TDOT, and everybody waited, that Monday morning it come out at about 9 a.m. We're all waiting. Whose project is making the cut? And I remember us having a meeting Friday afternoon before, and everybody was all a big online meeting across the state and the commission and everybody. And he was basically giving us the Dear John letter. And you could tell it was a breakup letter. And then he said, at 9 a.m. on Monday, you're going to find out who makes the cut. And that was tough. And it was a long weekend, and when Portland's bypass, the northern and the southern, was on there, that was a sigh of relief for us. It was difficult for a couple of my friends, Mayor West Golden up in Clarksville. was a little disheartened. They had been putting some money toward a project out of their own funds, and then that project didn't make the cut initially, and there were a couple other projects around the state. Just to put that in context, there's about $30 billion in projects. They get about $3 billion in money, and a lot of that goes to maintenance of effort. So when you put that in context, that's tough. That's
the reason people aren't getting the projects.
Yes, and one of the things TDOT's been trying to redo, the average build on a new road is in that 12 to 15 year range, closer to 15 years. They want to revamp that. Instead of doing in successful order, they want to do it in a parallel portion. Some of the things that we face, and I know you thought we were done with asphalt, and I'm still stuck on roads, is the NEPA portion, which is the environmental reviews.
Gotcha.
Some of that drives you nuts. We've been working on a CMAQ grant, congestion mitigation and air quality, here on 109 since about 2017. We're trying to connect these traffic signals via fiber optic with new control panels so that we can make the flow
signals.
It flow better.
It's done wonders in Gallatin.
Yes, and we're trying to
Henderson
get this
Hill's trying too.
Yeah, we're trying, and one of the things that held us up for long was a NEPA review, and they do hold us up, and I'm like, I understand why you do a NEPA review. So it's not doing one, but it's also using a common sense approach. Listen, this road's been here a long time. We're not widening it. We're not digging in the ditches. We ought to be able to look at something sometimes and say, that one needs a categorical exclusion, and we're going to not do NEPA on this because we know what's there, because it's not going anywhere. It's already been built. And we've had that hold up with a couple other projects, and we're not the only one across the state. And so they're looking at revamping some of these things that where it makes sense. And you know how it is, whether it's at Ball State College or it's in local government or it's at TDOT, we have a tendency to get into our silos, and we don't communicate well. People struggle to communicate.
Yep.
And so things don't move at the speed they should have moved sometimes. And they're trying to revamp the local program system. Butch Ely, the new commissioner at TDOT, Deputy Commissioner Preston Elliott, they're committed to revamping this. It's not going to happen overnight. TDOT has 4,000 employees across the state of Tennessee. There's big regions of counties. But I'm hopeful. We've been meeting. I serve on a task force that's meets on this and is part of this group, and I'm looking forward to seeing some changes. And being part of the Transportation Policy Board has been really big. I think it's been great for our community as well. It helps me be more plugged in to what we're doing down there as well. So there's a lot goes into what happens in people, and it's one reason why people hate government, right? Because government's so slow. But and I tell folks, government is designed to be slow. We don't like that answer, but it's actually designed to be slow. There's many times that it'd be better off for us just to go out and give the job to somebody's brother-in-law and get it done cheaper. The problem with that is you end up giving it to somebody's brother-in-law, and they didn't do it cheaper. They did a terrible job, and they took the money.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, the way we have to bid projects and scope projects, it takes so long. And then by the time you get the bids back, you didn't have enough money. Because let me share this with you, and I know Leonard's fixed to be mad at me because I'm doing all the talking.
No.
But this is how it works. So you got a project that you're interested in doing, and you have to have an idea of what the estimate of the project could be. So let's just say we estimate the project to be $1 million. So we look at trying to gain funding. We put the $1 million aside. Now we got to go through the whole process of really full designing it out, getting to a bid, because you can't do a bid unless it's fully designed out. Now we go get the bid, and the bid comes back at $1.5 million. Well, when you release a bid, you got about 60 days to sign the contract. Well, now I'm $500,000 short, so what do I do? Now I let it die. Do I rebid it? When I rebid it, everybody knows now what the bids are. Now the bids come back even higher sometimes, not always less. They come back in higher. And you get caught in this cycle. I've seen projects bid multiple times, and what we end up doing is getting less than what we hoped for more of the money we were told it would cost. And we're dealing with a project right now, a huge collaborative, Gallatin, Castalian Springs, Bethpage, Westmoreland, and us, trying to do a 23-mile long water line. We're getting close to the point we're going to have to bid it.
Yeah, the water line was actually one of the things I want to talk about.
Yeah.
I might get back around to it.
Yeah, and so we know it's going to have a cost overrun by the estimate. How much? Because it hadn't been bid. But if we bid it, how can we bid it and be ready to award it if we don't have the money, because we don't know how much money the project's going to cost until you bid it? And
all that time, everything gets more expensive because you got inflation.
It does, and we have a federal deadline of December 2026 that all the money from the ARPA has to be spent out, the project has to be done. The state has moved that deadline up to September 30th because they have to have time now to send all the reporting and forms to the Treasury. So they moved it up to September 30th, so now we lost that time. And we're talking about a project here that will probably take about a year and a half to do. It's a 23-mile-long water transmission line. So we're coming up on some hard deadlines here. We've got most of all the engineering done, and now we're in this mode, how is this actually going to work? And can we get, because this will probably be multiple contractors who bid on this, and we may have to use multiple contractors for a project of this size.
Sure.
So it's pretty intricate and complicated.
But hopefully in the end, people will have water.
That's what we're hoping. This project, if successful, would supply up to 2 million gallons of water a day treated. And that sounds like a lot of water. And it'd be a big help to us. Now, that's not a end-all, be-all. But it is a stopgap until other things can be done. And those other things still going to require help from the state, Army Corps of Engineers. We're in contact with them on a regular basis. Matter of fact, I just got a call before I come to your show from one of the state senator's office. Said, hey, we're setting up a meeting. We'll let you know. Here's a tentative date. We're going to try to meet and see if there's any clawback funds available, because we know this project is going to have cost overruns. And so we've been talking to them. If there's going to be any projects that don't succeed, because these timelines are coming up, and that money's going to get pulled back. Because if you can't make it, you're losing it. Can it be applied over to this project? Because we know that right now we're estimating over $16 million more needed. We have $28 million in grant funds.
Wow. Okay.
So it's pretty extensive.
Wow, that sure does sound extensive. And I imagine it must be a little frustrating at times when you're sitting there waiting for the phone to ring and your constituents are like,
without a doubt,
when are we getting that water line? When are we getting that road built? When are we getting that sewer?
So that's the reason why I try to do, and I can do a whole lot better job. Listen, my wife Diane's with me. She's not on the mic. She don't want to speak on the radio.
She doesn't want to speak. She's been asked.
She's been asked, but she chooses not to. But, you know, we're coming up in April. We'll be married 42 years. So, and I say that from this time, communication's hard. So you try to communicate, and I'm a terrible communicator, and sometimes I have it in my mind, and I don't tell my wife exactly what I was thinking, but I got it in my mind. And I'm bad about that sometimes in our city, and I know what's going on. I've got it in my mind. I just fail to make sure. Sometimes I think everybody else knows, and I forget to communicate that. So I try to do some videos. I try to put some posts out on social media. I was standing, walking around in West Forest Drake's Creek just a few weeks ago. Our media manager done a great video, used his drone and all these things out there. I wanted people to see, in reality, we're not the Cumberland River. I think people, I can tell them we're getting water out of West Forest Drake's Creek. Intellectually, they understand that. But emotionally, they see the Cumberland River in their mind when they think of West Forest Drake's Creek.
Right.
When you put it in perspective, Hendersonville Utility District, White House Utility District, the city of Gallatin gets all their raw water from the Cumberland River Old Hickory system. Mm-hmm. Hendersonville Utility District's intake in the Cumberland is 40 feet under the water level in the river. 40 feet. Our intake out here at West Forest Drake's Creek, it's on a slight slant sitting in the water. One end has about 6 inches of cover.
Wow.
The other end has about a foot.
So one dry spell, your pipe's sticking out of the water, isn't it?
2007, it was sticking out of the water. This past drought that we've just been in, part of it was sticking out of the water. We were draining the lake. Our lake only holds 89 million gallons. I was told it health, $120 million, and I said, I don't think I believe it, so I had it sonared. We had $89 million, not $120 million. We were draining the lake to keep the pool around the intake going so that we could maintain water. If Hurricane Helene had not come through, we got almost 7 inches of rain in a week. It filled our lake back up. Mm-hmm. Very thankful. But I was going to make the call to go to mandatory restrictions. We were watching the weather. Remember, the previous hurricane missed us and went west and sent all the rain to Memphis.
Right.
Sent it all to West Tennessee. We didn't get any. Mm-hmm. So I was watching, and I said, we got a good chance. I said, one week's not going to do us in. Let's just wait and see. We waited. Rain came because it's a big deal when you start moving to mandatory restrictions. It's a big deal. And everybody has a drought management plan. Every city goes through it. We put out a call for voluntary restrictions, and it wasn't just Portland. Listen, when Franklin, Tennessee and Spring Hill, they have the Harpeth River, and they were struggling. The Duck River was drying up. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And then little old West Fork Drake's Creek that barely has any flow in it anyway, let alone a drought. We were struggling, and we were weeks away from no water. And when I say that, that's not hyperbole. That's not exaggeration. We're producing about 2.5 million gallons a day to go out to our customers. We can only, by two small connections, bring in about 350,000 gallons a day. If we run out of water, you run out of water if you're a customer of Portland.
Right.
And you're not trucking in 2.5 million gallons of water every day. We would be shutting down businesses, and nobody wants to go through that. And so we've been working hard to find a solution. The city's been trying to do this for the last 60 years. And as I said Monday night at the council meeting, we had that big discussion, and you could just see the looks on the council members' faces, and that reality was setting in. I said, this is it. This is the moment. And I've been telling you, but now you're living it. This is the moment that every council has got to for decades. That moment they went, but who can afford that? And I said, that's why we're still where we are, because every council for decades had got to that point. And whether it was in 1964 and they said it's going to be $1 million to get water out of Gallatin, $1 million was a lot of money for the city of Portland in 1964. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking tens of millions. And it's only going to go up down the road.
Sure, every council from here on in would be paying more. Sure.
Yeah, so it's tough. And we have to do something. We have to make some improvements, but we're 23 to 25 miles away from raw water. And we looked at trying to build a raw water line several years ago, and we were basically told it probably couldn't get permitted. We couldn't afford it anyway. You have to go through that. Remember, the Army Corps put a moratorium on any new or expanded withdrawals out of the Cumberland from 2011 to 2021, a 10-year moratorium, so they could do studies. They wanted to make sure that more withdrawals would not hinder navigation. And the studies proved it would not. But the problem is you got to get it permitted. All the withdrawals in the Cumberland is permitted through the Army Corps. Once you get onto shore a little bit of a distance from there all the way to you is now T-Deck. And fighting through that, crossing streams and doing all the things and buying the right-of-way, because where is your line going to get installed at, and moving utilities for 25 miles, you're running over something if you're digging a ditch. You're going to run over something. And the cost becomes so astronomical. And remember how the Tennessee law is structured. An enterprise fund is a fund that deals with anything like a utility, water, sewer, natural gas. The way the law is structured, you have to cover that cost divided by the ratepayer. So on our water system, the city of Portland has about, we call a customer a meter. That's how we look at it. How many meters do you have is how many customers you have. So you have about 8,300 customers on our water distribution system. Over a third of those is outside of the city limits. They're in counties of Sumner and Robertson. They're scattered all over. We're almost touching Westmoreland, and so we expand pretty far out. if you were to take $100 million and divide that out over a period of a 30-year note every month to every one of those customers, and then you have to depreciate that because Tennessee is one of the few states in the country that forces you to do depreciation on some of those capital improvements on utilities, you can capitalize that out over 40 years on a water line. It's almost paying for it twice when you depreciate it versus the bond note that you've got to cover. And when you tell a water customer, hey, we can do this, we're going to have to put $60, $70 on your bill every month. That's before you even pay for anything.
Right.
And the only way to bring the cost down is to have more customers.
Right.
And I tell their council, I said, if you want water cost and sewer cost to go down, you have to have more customers. But you can't have more customers if you don't have the water. And we're caught in this vicious cycle that when you're far away from a raw water source, communities like us are constrained. And we're sitting, the state wants to invest in us. They're constantly sending industrial opportunities to us because we're sitting right on I-65. We got the industrial park. The state wants to get incentives. People are relocating out of Illinois because they can't pay the tax structure. And we just got one the other day that we've already met with Industrial Development Board, and they're coming to Tennessee to do manufacturing. All those things we face, but we keep saying, listen, but we can have water. Mm-hmm. We've got to solve this issue along the way. And so one of the things that we've been working on, and I've been hammering it, and I know my wife gets tired of hearing me. She hears all these great ideas, see, before
I'm
anybody
sure
else
does.
And is reclaimed water. And I did a capstone project about 3 years ago called Reclaiming Our Resources, and I've shared it with the state. Everybody has it. I'm a letter writer. All the senators, all the representatives, everybody gets something from Mayor Callas. They may not have met me yet, but they've got a letter from me. And I send them all this stuff. But reclaimed water is nothing new. Florida, Texas, Colorado, even California, as strict as they are on some things, they are doing some reclaimed water. So right now, we're drawing water out of West Forest Drake's Creek, which is one watershed. We treat that water, and we send it to your house. It comes out of your faucet. It goes through the system. It goes through the sewer plant. The sewer plant has to treat it because you can't release dirty water or chlorinated water into a stream. And it goes to another watershed. We don't get any use out of that water. And so from the months of June, July, and August, we averaged about 1.64 million gallons a day of discharge that's been treated. It's not treated to potable, but it's been treated cleaner than the creek or the lakes are, and I had it tested, I know for a fact, because we have a state-certified testing lab, and I said, I want you to test it all. I want to see it on paper. By far, the cleanest water between the creeks and the lakes is what we discharge out of the sewer plant. I said, all I want to do is take it and run it to the head of the lake. It's already cleaner than what's in the lake.
Right, right.
And that gives us another source of water. So other places are using it. Spring Hill's working on a project. Franklin, Tennessee's working on a project because they're struggling with water. We have astronauts in our space station up above us right now. It's using the same type of system. And so we want to be able to, remember, everything would get treated again anyway. But just to ask you from this standpoint, why in the world, this is the only thing we know. The only thing we know is to use treated water for everything. You're using potable water right now to make all the concrete that's getting used in Sumner County. You're using potable water right now to wash sidewalks, to fight fires,
right.
To do sprinkler systems. We can
and
do
there's no reason that water needs to be.
We can do something different. So purple pipe, if you ever see purple pipe on an installation, now you'll know purple pipe is reclaimed water. Okay. We're finishing up phase two of our sewer plant over here, and this is one of the things I talked about 2 or 3 years ago, and now it's fixed to become a reality. We're fixing to have substantial completion at the sewer plant across from us in November. The new filtration, we've already got some things installed on site. We've got some purple pipe. One of the things I want to start doing right out of the gate when it gets completed, I want to wash all of our equipment with reclaimed water. No sense in using treated water to wash the backhoes and all the things that we clean. And I want to start filling up fire trucks. We're using treated water to fill up fire trucks. We don't need to do that. And I want to grow that out, not just to irrigation, but all the fire suppression. I would love one day to see a water tank that's solely reuse for the purpose to the fire lines of industry, and their sprinklers are no longer on the drinking system, but on the reclaim system. This is doable in
and
America.
And that tank would be purple, wouldn't it?
Tank would be purple. Perfect color for us, right?
All right, Mayor, I got to put you on hold for a minute. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll have some more with Mayor Mike Callis. You're listening to The Loyal Opposition on WQKR.
McDonald's presents Burger Reviews by Hamburglar. Today's review, the hotter, juicier, classic burgers. Hamburglar, the time is yours.
Rubble, rubble.
He said, these are McDonald's best burgers ever. And then, can I keep them? And then he just grabbed them and ran away.
Rubble.
It's your time to run, too. Get your McDonald's favorites. Enjoy this delicious deal. Buy one Big Mac, double cheeseburger, or McDouble. And get another one for $1. Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Here's an important message from Portland Natural Gas. Always looking out for your safety. Think you have a gas leak? First, evacuate the area. Don't use matches, electrical switches, flashlights, or telephones. And report it immediately by calling Portland Natural Gas at 325-6776. If you think the leak is serious and a real danger is present, call 911. Portland Natural Gas, looking out for your safety and providing cost-efficient heating and cooling for Portland residents.
Now you can join Planet Fitness and get the PF Black Card for zero enrollment, $24.99 a month, and get all the perks.
I love perks.
Do you love having access to 2,000 plus locations?
Yes.
Bringing a friend every time?
Hashtag friend goals.
And recovering with massage chairs?
Who doesn't?
Get the PF Black Card and feel fitacular. Zero enrollment, $24.99 a month. See club for details.
If you're on Medicare, here's exciting news. The Medicare annual enrollment period is just weeks away. Portland has a local trusted advisor who can help seniors sort through all the confusing aspects of Medicare, and there are a lot of changes in cost and services this year. Kyle Doris and Medicare Insurance Advisors can help you make sense out of all the plans and supplements. Best of all, the advice and service from Kyle and MIA doesn't cost you a penny. Give them a call at 615-325-0064 or visit Kyle at 621 South Broadway.
The Medical Center at Franklin is proud to serve the Franklin-Simpson County community. More than just a hospital, the Medical Center at Franklin offers the care you need close to home. From primary care to routine screenings like mammograms, colonoscopies, or lung cancer screenings, we take care of your emergency needs, offer school-based care, and even cancer and rehab services. Visit medcenterhealth.org/franklin to learn more.
The Beatles?
Pat Benatar? Survivor?
The Who?
Led Zeppelin!
Reminds me of the stuff I grew up listening to. You know, reminds me of being a kid and stuff.
WQKR plays the music you grew up with. Great rock and roll and pop hits from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's fun to listen to. Fun contests and great prizes, too. All day, every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
WQKR. WQKR.
It's reminiscent. It's the stuff that you grew up with.
Everyone, this is The Loyal Opposition. I'm your host, Len Asante, with Mayor Mike Callis here on WQKR. 72 degrees in Portland right now, going down to 49 tonight. Lovely evening. Well, like I said, we're talking with Mayor Mike Callis here. Well, Mayor Mike Callis is talking with us, really. you know, we've got election season is upon us. Silly season, as I like to call it.
Right? Yep.
Silly season. And possibility, I guess we might have some new council members come next year. Huh?
You know, we're going to at least have one. Well, at least have one, because Penny Barnes chose not to run. She chose to put her whole focus in on the school board, and and I understand that.
School board needs it.
She needs it, and they need it, and for her, and she just had a heart, she says, you know, for children. And, you know, I told her, I said, Penny, I said, we would love to have you stay on the board. And I know that you'll have to sort that out, those commitments. The school board does meet on a different night, but it's still a lot. And so sometimes, and I know you focused on politics for a long time, it always looks easier from the outside looking in, no matter what level, whether it's on the local level or county or state. It always looks easier until you get in it. Then you realize the amount of information you are given on a regular basis.
Right.
And you're trying to absorb it. And I tell folks all the time,
the
whether
packet, as they call it.
The
right?
packet. The packet. And whether it's a city council meeting or whether you're down at the General Assembly, these folks are really part-time. They have other jobs and these things. They just want to serve their community, and they're trying to make the best decision they can based on the information they have at that moment. And so I do give a lot of grace in that. You know, I may not politically align with one side or another, but even in that, I try to give them grace because I recognize, man, it's tough. Because I know for myself the amount of times I have left a council meeting when I was an alderman. We got done with the meeting. We met all night. We did it. And on the way home, the question I should have asked popped into my mind.
Right. Oh, yes. Coulda, shoulda, woulda, right?
Yes. And then I stay up all night.
Bother your wife.
Reliving it. Yeah. and thinking about it. And so I get it. We do get a lot of information. I've served with a lot of different personalities over the years. Some who just come in, they've come in, and that night they just opened up their packet for the first time. I never recommend that to anybody. I think you should do your homework and be involved and do all that. So it is tough. And if you're coming in and you're sincere, you'll do the hard work. You'll learn the issues, and you'll find the ways, ins and out of it. I think one of the worst things, I don't care what level of politics you're in, if you come in believing, I got it all figured out and I know what's best, or I got an axe to grind, man, that don't ever, over the years, that just don't turn out well.
Right.
But if you say, you know, I just want to serve, and I want to learn.
We've seen some examples of the axe grinding type in Sumner County over
and it
the
don't
years.
Work out well.
Yeah,
and
they don't last long a lot of times.
They don't last long, and I'll tell you something else. I'm not saying I don't get frustrated at decisions people make. I do. I get frustrated. I'm human. And I have to carry that to the Lord and say, man, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have been frustrated. But I can handle, if that's your conviction, and you believe that's your conviction, I can respect you for that. Whatever that conviction is, whatever that you really hold fast to and you believe.
Right.
I can respect that. What I struggle with is if you have to tear the other side or the other opponent or someone down to get your – I struggle with that. I don't like that. I want more civility because – and I want to be able to disagree with you, leave the meeting, go have a cup of coffee with you, not leave as your enemy. I don't want to be your enemy, and I don't like conflict. I don't know anybody really – likes conflict per se. I think some like to relish in drama, but at the end of the day, they realize they're probably not the better for it. So I want to be able to listen to you. Tell me why. Find common ground. I will work with somebody. They may be on the other end of the spectrum, but if I can work with you for the betterment of a community or a project, I will do that. I've got we've got a common friend, Michelle Harbin.
Ah, sure.
So, you know, and she's the woo-woo of everybody in the crowd. She's the woo-woo person. But I've known Michelle for a long time.
I think Michelle would make a great Portland city council person
you
someday.
Know, yeah, and we're on to. The yeah, we're on the opposite politically of a lot of beliefs. But the difference is Michelle and I talk about that. And we also can find common ground on things. And we can also say, you know what? It doesn't matter whether it's Democrat or Republican or independent. That don't come into play. We're just trying to figure out how to improve the library.
Right.
Trying to be friends of the library. How do we buy some furniture for the library? Right. So you put all that other junk. But if I come into it and say that I'm not working with X.
Mm-hmm. They belong to party Y.
Don't that exclude right. you? Right. Exactly. That's kind of listen.
And it doesn't improve the library, does it?
No, it doesn't. That's what. So if I vote no on something because I don't like you, what have I just done? Then I've not upheld my obligation.
You've not upheld your oath.
That's right.
You haven't.
So I can stay there and I can.
I've always believed personally that despite my partisanship, local offices, should be nonpartisan because potholes got to get filled, schools got to get staffed, library books got to get bought, regardless of what political party you're at, right?
Hey, I sent an email out to several folks in General Assembly. It constantly comes up, make local elections partisan. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't think we should do that for two reasons. One, most of the national politics creep in enough as it is, and it has nothing to do with that pothole or that park playground. As you just rightly said. But here's what else you do. You force now another election in a community. You force more spending by election commissions. You force more spending by candidates. You force candidates to go out there. Now, if I actually want to compete, now I need to raise money. Now I need to go do these things. When before, I could have just went out there and said, I am candidate X, and I'm running for Portland, and because I want to build, because I have it in my mind, I want a splash pad for the community. I want to work toward that.
Ah, splash pad. Cool.
Right?
I'm pro splash pad.
Right? So we're fixing to build one in the city of Portland. The bids will open up next week. I'm sure the calls will be open. But that didn't have to be partisan. And then all the partisan stuff. And I've got some deeply held beliefs. That affects how I vote without a doubt. Which is fine, and I'm okay with anybody's deeply held beliefs, and they want to do that, and that's okay. But once again, I've had to tell folks, I said, we're not dealing with that right here today. We're just not dealing with it. I'll tell you a funny story. This was many, many years ago, and that person is elderly, and I don't even know if they're still around. They was pretty elderly then. I was running for the city council. All I want to do is serve the community. Man, I didn't have a clue how it worked. I had to go, I got to go find 25 people, put their name on exactly. The whole nine yards, right? I didn't know how to work none of this stuff, and we didn't put really no money into it. We were writing letters and licking stamps and doing all that. And I had a lady call me on my home phone, which the average person don't have. We still have one, by the way. We still have a home phone. Because we've had that number for a gazillion years.
Can't give it up.
Yeah, we've had
it. It's like part of the family.
I know it. And she said, I just need to know one thing. And I said, yes, ma'am. She said, if you get elected, will you take away my Social Security? And I said, no, ma'am, I make you a promise. If I get elected as city council member, I will not take away your Social Security. And that's just one of those things because they kind of get conflated.
Sure.
And maybe everybody.
People don't know all the time.
Don't always know. And that's the reason why I try to say we need to do. If you've known how many times I've tried to talk with groups, and I like doing that. I talk with kids. We bring school kids and groups over, and I spend time talking with them. I try to talk to them about civics, understanding separation of powers and all that. I like talking about some of that stuff. But one of the things I spend a lot of time talking is the difference between general fund, special revenue, and enterprise fund, and what you can spend money on a cop car on and what you can't, because it gets confusing. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame it because it's difficult. So my
got any new cop cars in Portland?
We have gotten some.
All right.
And so we try to buy some on a regular basis, because they wear out. This is another fun factoid. My wife and I are both certified municipal finance officers. And I don't know how many married people there are in the state who carry that designation.
It's probably pretty small.
Yeah, pretty small. But, that's one of the things that's required by the state of Tennessee, that every municipality must either have one on staff or contract with one. We're very fortunate in the city of Portland. So on staff in City Hall, our finance director, CMFO, our assistant finance director, CMFO, We've got another person, Brandon McGuire, in the finance department. He's fixing to get his certification at the end of this year. I'm certified as well. And I did it mainly because I wanted to better communicate with my finance department.
Sure.
I'm not an accountant.
You want to be able to speak their language.
Yeah, my wife does accounting. She works for a nonprofit for going on 30 years, I guess, now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she's versed in it. But I want to be able to do a better job talking about budgets, right? So,
gotcha.
You know,
right.
Yeah.
All right, folks.
He gave me the wind-up, Morty. Did you see it? He said, shut up, man. We got to do this thing. We're over time. I get it.
Actually, not a big problem tonight. But we are pretty much out of time. I want to thank Mayor Callis for dropping by and spending some time with us and his very talkative wife sitting next to him. Glad you got let him get a word in edgewise every now and then. Folks, let's see. What have I got here for you? Okay, there is no Triple Play Sports tonight. So if you're waiting for Triple Play,